As you open your Bible to 1 Samuel chapter number 14, I want to provide you with some chronological information as to where I think we're at with King Saul's war against the Philistines. It appears to me that right around 1037 BC, which would have been the 420th year since the Exodus, it was in the spring or possibly the summer of that year that the Israelis were worried about Nahash the Ammonite threatening them on their eastern border. So they came to Samuel, who was about 60 at this time, and said, "We want a king, just like all the other nations have." And so even though he doesn't really want to do it, at the command of God, Samuel goes out and anoints Saul the Benjamite as the sort of king that the Israelis want. Now, that turns into a public inauguration ceremony right around, I think, the seventh month of that same year. So 1037 BC, in the beginning of the fall. The next spring, 1036, that's when Nahash attacks Jabesh-Gilead, and Saul goes and defends them, beats them soundly. And the Israelis immediately join the prophet Samuel at Gilgal in the Jordan Valley during the wheat harvest and reaffirm that Saul is indeed the king they had wanted. So that's the first year of Saul's reign. In the second year, which would have started, I believe, in the seventh month of the year 1036, Saul appoints for himself some full-time military personnel. About 3,000 of them is what he starts with. And his intention seems to be to eradicate the Philistine presence inside Benjamin. And that does not go over well with the Philistines. So they bring their military, a huge force, off the plain of the Mediterranean, up into the center part of Israel, and then down to Michmash, which is where Saul had been doing his military operation. Now, he wasn't at Michmash anymore. By then, he was down at Gilgal again, trying to get his militia force together. He was supposed to wait 7 days for Samuel to come and act as the spiritual leader and offer a sacrifice on their behalf, but Saul jumped the gun, offered the sacrifice for himself, and got in trouble over it. But this helps us understand that Saul was already starting to go bad in the beginning of his second year, 1036 BC, hardly any time on the throne at all. And Samuel told him at that time that God has someone else that will be a new king, someone that's after his own heart. But we now need to see how the fight with this invading Philistine force goes. When we dropped everything off yesterday, the army under Saul is at Gibeah and Gibba, which is south of the ravine that Michmash is located on. Michmash is on the north of the ravine. Gibba is on the south side of the ravine. Now, Saul doesn't have an awful lot of forces left because many of them defected, or not defected, but went AWOL once they saw how big this Philistine invading force was. And Saul is trying to figure out how best to carry out his military operation. Meanwhile, his heir, his oldest son, Jonathan, decides that what really needs to happen is that they should just trust God. So chapter 14 of 1 Samuel, verse number 1. One day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, so his lieutenant, his right-hand guy, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Now Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people that were with him were about 600 men, so not a bunch, including Ahiyah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli. So one of the people with Saul on this day is a member of the priestly family, the son of the currently serving high priest. This Ahijah would be the grandson, actually the great-grandson of Eli, the priest of he who is at Shiloh, who we remember was not a very good priest and ended up dying by now it's been about 41 or 2 years since Eli's death. 21 or so years since Eli's death. This Ahiyah was wearing an ephod. So he's kind of like functioning as the officiating priest, overseeing the troops as they get ready to go to war. And the people did not know that Jonathan was gone. So once again, we get this emphasized. Jonathan is acting on his own. Verse 41. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez, which has something to do about glistening white. The name of the other was Sinnah, which has to do with being thorny. So Jonathan and his right-hand guy go to the place where there's two really difficult to ascend areas on either side of this ravine. And they're going to go across to the Philistine side. Verse 5. The one crag rose on the north in front of Michmash, and the other on the south in front of Gibeah. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of this uncircumcised. It may be that he who is will work for us. For nothing can hinder he who is from saving by many or by few." So take note of the faith of Jonathan. He is a man with a connection to God. He believes the sacred stories that God only needs to use those who are faithful, those who trust him, to get great things done. So he says, "All right, guy. God can give us a victory today if we'll just trust him. Let's go." His armor bearer said to him, "Do all that's in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you heart and soul." So this guy is also a faithful man. Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men and we will show ourselves to them. If they say, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we're going to stand still in our place and we're not going to go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we're going to go up, for he who is has given them into our hand, and this shall be a sign for us." Now, I like the way that he phrases this. He says, "All right, we're going to go down into the bottom of the ravine. When they spot us, if they say, 'Wait, we're going to come down to you,' we'll wait for them and we'll take them on down in the bottom of the ravine. But if they say, 'Hey, you guys, come on up here,' then we're going to go up there and we'll take them on up there because God will have given them into our hands. Verse 11. So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. Now, this is not the full army of the Philistines. This is the watch outpost that's keeping an eye on the ravine. Because the only way that the Israeli army can get to the Philistines is by crossing this ravine. So this group of Philistines is keeping an eye on that potential movement. They would also be able to see from here the encampment of Saul a couple of miles away over at Gibeah. And they'd be able to spot any movement that would be happening over there. And the Israelis, they've got outposts on the opposite side kind of keeping track of stuff. All right, so Jonathan and his right-hand guy, they allow the Philistine outpost to see them. And what happens? Verse 10. Verse 11 continues. The Philistines said, "Well, look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes which they've hidden themselves in." So remember yesterday we were talking about how Israelis are all hiding out because they don't want to be caught by the Philistines. So that's what they're making fun of. Is, hey, some of those Israelis are coming out of their little hidey holes. Verse 12, the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us and we'll show you a thing." So come on up here, we'll teach you a lesson. We'll show you what fraidy cat little Israelis get done to them. Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for he who is has given them into the hand of Israel." So Jonathan sees this as a sign from God to sick them, get them. Now remember, this is just two guys. And evidently, only one of them really has a good sword. So verse 13, Jonathan climbed up on his hands and his feet. That tells you how steep this ravine side is. His armor bearer after him. And there fell before Jonathan and his armor-bearer, killed them after him. So as soon as he gets to the top of the ravine, on the north side of it, he starts wailing on the Philistines that are up there and killing them. So Jonathan is killing them right and left, well, at least maiming them, and the armor-bearer is coming along and doing cleanup. Probably the armor-bearer grabs himself a sword or a spear from a fallen Philistine pretty quick. That first strike, which Jonathan and his armor-bearer made, killed about 20 men within it, as it were half a furrow's length in an acre of land. Now, it's a description of how big an area this little outpost occupied. It wouldn't have been monstrous, but it would have been big enough that it's mentioned here as significant. He killed 20 guys in this little outpost. That's one guy, plus his helper, kills 20 guys. This goes back to the promise that God gave the Israelites. If you're living by the covenant, then one of you will scatter 10 of the enemy. 10 of you will scatter 100, and 100 of you will scatter 1,000. Well, Jonathan is getting better odds than that in his work. Now, verse 15 tells us, there was panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled, the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. So now God seems to get into it supernaturally here. Now, he's already helping Jonathan supernaturally in the fight, hand to hand. But now he causes the ground to start shaking. He sends a localized earthquake right here in the Michmash encampment of the Philistines. And this causes a panic amongst the Philistines. And we've seen how a panic affects the enemies of God's people before. They start killing each other. So something like that must be happening. Plus, Jonathan would be killing anyone coming to reinforce this outpost of the Philistines when a signal goes out that they need assistance. All right, so you've got all that in your mind? We've got Jonathan in the middle of a fight, and he is laying out Philistines right and left with God's assistance. There's a localized earthquake that's happening. It's possible that the Philistines are panicking and killing each other. And that's when verse 16 happens. The watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude was dispersing here and there. So a sharp-eyed individual, perhaps up on a watchtower, keeping an eye on the Michmash encampment, he sees that there's stuff going on over there. And probably they're starting to hear it as well from a distance. And Saul said to the people who are with him, "Count and see who has gone from us." Because he makes the assumption, all right, we've got some sort of volunteer force that's decided to start the fight ahead of us. So they counted, and behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. So Saul said to Ahiah, "Bring the Ark of God here." For the Ark of God went at that time with the people of Israel. Now, the Ark of the Covenant had been located down at Kiriath Yearim. You remember that's the place that it came back to after it came back from the Philistine territory. Apparently, it is brought to the military encampment at Gibeah for this fight that's coming up. And Ahiah was functioning as the priest at that particular spot with the ark. And so they want to talk to God about what they should do next. That's what seems to be going on here. Verse 19, "Now while Saul was talking to the priest, the tumult in the camp of the Philistines increased more and more." So the spotter, the watchman, says, "Hey, it's getting worse over there. There's a lot of movement." Because, of course, we know there's an earthquake over there, and we know that Jonathan is just killing these soldiers right and left, and his assistant is finishing it up. And it's possible, again, I'm going to remind you, that the Philistines might be killing each other. There might be some fires that have started out because, you know, when they're fighting back and forth, they might knock some of the fires, the watch fires, over against flammable material. So there's all sorts of stuff going on over there. And Saul gets told, "Hey, it's getting worse." So what does he do? Saul said to the priest, "Withdraw your hand." So he had been trying to get the priest, apparently, to reach in the Urim pocket, the Urim and the Thummim pocket, to get answers from God as to what he was supposed to do next. But now that it's all out of control, sounds like, he says, "I can't talk to God anymore. I've got to move on. I've got to move." So this is, again, that character of him, that he's not willing to wait on God. He acts on his own as he sees fit. He's very much kind of a king of the period of the judges. Everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. Verse number 20. "Then Saul and all the people who were with him rallied and went into battle. And behold, every Philistine's sword was against his fellow, and there was great confusion." Now that tells us beyond a shadow of a doubt, by the time Saul is in the fight, the Philistines are killing each other because they are totally confused as to what's going on here. So Saul and his forces, they make their way across the ravine. And since it's only a couple of miles, they can jog and be there within, you know, 20 or so minutes. And they can be in the middle of the fight. But that's not the only thing that's happening. Listen to this one, verse 21. "Now the Hebrews, who had been with the Philistines before that time, and who had gone with them into the camp, even they also turned to be with the Israelis who were with Saul and Jonathan. This is where we find out that there were some Israelis that had chosen to cooperate with the invading Philistine force because they likely thought that the Philistines were going to win and they would prefer to be in the good graces of the Philistines. But now, when they realize God's fighting on their behalf and the Philistines are going to lose, they join in fighting the Philistines. Verse 22, likewise, when all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines were fleeing, they too followed hard after them in the battle. So some of the deserters, they realize what's going on. This is going against the Philistines. God's fighting on their behalf. And so they jump in the rout as well. Verse 23, so he who has saved Israel that day, and the battle passed beyond Beth Horon. So that's on the way back to the Mediterranean coast. The Philistines are retreating in mass to the west, and the Israelis are pursuing them. Verse 24, the men of Israel had been hard pressed that day, so Saul had laid an oath on the people, saying, cursed be the man who eats food until it is evening, and I am avenged on my enemies. For some reason, perhaps because some of his people had said, we need to eat as we're going into battle, Saul had said, nobody's eating until we win. And may the Lord damn anyone who eats anything today until we have one. And notice the way he phrases it is, and I'm avenged on my enemies. So he puts the Israelis under a mandatory fast with the oath of God. And so they wouldn't eat. Verse 25, now when all the people came to the forest, behold, there was honey on the ground. So they're chasing the Philistines westward. They come into a very woody area, and there's either fruit that's fallen down, and the juicy part of it, the juicy part of the fruit, we're talking about figs and things like that, is sometimes referred to as the honey, or we're talking about actual beehives, ground nesting bees that have made hives on the ground, or maybe in the little trees. And so they see this, that it's easily gotten to. So verse 26, when the people entered the forest, behold, the honey was dropping, but no one put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath, because they'd heard Saul say, may God damn anyone who doesn't avenge or help me avenge the people without bothering to eat today. But Jonathan had not heard his father charge the people with the oath. So he put out the tip of the staff that was in his hand. He dipped it in some honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes became bright. So he got some of this honey, and it was like an energy food for him. It gave him that surge, that extra strength that he needed to keep on running and chasing these Philistines down. Because the goal is get the Philistines before they get into their strongholds. Then one of the people said, your father strictly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed is the man who eats food this day. And the people were faint. So Jonathan said, my father has troubled the land. See how my eyes have become bright because I tasted a little of this honey? How much better if the people have eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies that they found. For now the defeat among the Philistines has not been great. So Jonathan gets told about the oath, and he says, man, my father is making it really tough on the Israelis. Because look at me, I've got energy back because I ate. If he had just let people eat, we would have gotten even more done in the mop-up operations today. Verse 31, so they struck down the Philistines that day from Michmash to Aijalon, which is down where the hill country of Israel turns into the flatland of the Mediterranean. And the people were very faint. The people pounced on the spoil and took sheep and oxen and calves and slaughtered them on the ground. This is after the sun's gone down, apparently, and the fight is over. And so the oath is now finished. And the people ate them with the blood. So they didn't properly butcher them. They did not kosher kill them. And so they are violating God's kosher laws. Verse 33, then they told Saul, behold, the people are sinning against he who is by eating with the blood. And he said, you have dealt treacherously. Roll a great stone here to me. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, let every man bring his ox or his sheep or slaughter them here and eat, and don't sin against he who is by eating with the blood. So every one of the people brought his ox with him that night, and they slaughtered them there. So he officiates at making sure that all the animals that were part of the plunder are butchered in a kosher fashion. That is, they have their throat sliced and their blood out before they're cut up and roasted. And then Saul built an altar to he who is. It was the first altar that he built to he who is. So he offers thanks to God for the victory of this day. Verse 36, Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines by night, plunder them until the morning light. Let us not leave a man of them. And they said, well, do whatever seems good to you. But the priest said, let us draw near to God here. So Saul wants to keep fighting through the night. The people are with that, but the priest, Ahiah, says, why don't we check in with God? So Saul inquired of God, shall I go down to the Philistines? Will you give them into the hand of Israel? And he did not answer him that day. And this is where we'll pick up the story tomorrow.